Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Away for another Vaughan boundary.
Well, he's a great fieldsman, Philip Tuffnell. He often falls over and he's brought it into his batting as well.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Vaughan and Tuffo's Cricket Club podcast brought to you by The Telegraph. Ben Wright, Michael Vaughan and Phil Tuffnell back with you for the duration of England's tour to Pakistan. And to celebrate our return, we have gone right to the very top of English cricket for our guest today, the head coach of the men's test team, Brendan McCullum. Three of us caught up with him shortly before England departed for Pakistan to talk about his whirlwind start in charge of the Red Bull side and how he is preparing for his first tour in charge. As well as Test cricket, I'll be asking Mike and Phil for their reflections on England's T20 World Cup win a few weeks ago and the recent big news about the 100. Mike, Phil, while we've been away, England have become T20 World Champions. How incredible an achievement is it to hold the 50 over and the T20 Cups at the same time?
Yeah, welcome back, Phil. Welcome back, Ben. It's been a while. What have you been doing, Phil?
Oh, not too much, mate. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. Messing about, looking forward to Christmas. It's all good, my end.
Can I ask a question about Christmas? Have you got your decorations up yet? Bearing in mind we're not into December, because I'll just let you know, yes. The decorations at the Vaughan House have been up for 10 days.
You've gone early.
10 days already.
I tell you what I fancy, though.
So how do you decide when to put them up?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. They're not quite up at the moment, but a friend of mine has got, like, a fantastic tree that you just take out of a box and it just sort of springs into life, fully decorated, fully lit. It's an absolute cracker. It's brilliant. I'm going to get one of them.
Phil, that's called an artificial one.
No, it's... Oh, have you got a real one, Mike? Have you got a real tree?
No, that's why. Honestly, it's always, I'm always thinking about November the 20th, but this year, just under, I think it was the 18th of November, suddenly I came back to a house with all these decorations up far too early. I mean, I'm not going to argue with the boss of the house, but, you know, slightly too early, I would suggest the Vaughan decorations have gone up. Anyway, what are we chatting about? T20 World Cup, Ben, very, very, very good point there, the most serious point of the lot. It didn't surprise me. I don't know what you think, Phil, but I just think we're in a kind of generation of England being the best white ball team by I'm not saying a country mile, but in terms of squad, of what they've got. And if you look at them winning the T20, no Jofra Archer, no Johnny Bairstow, Malan was injured. You know, so many kind of fractions in and around the build-up to the tournament. And then they lose to Ireland, and you think, oh, geez, this is going to be a tough ask to win from here. And from pretty much losing to Ireland, they just dominated. They just got their mojos. They got their kind of form. They got their kind of flamboyant way of playing. They became a very good defending team, but also... We know with good teams that can do, they can do it either way. They've got a magnificent set of white ball players. The best in the world by, as I said, just quite a good distance at the minute.
Yeah, I think they were the best all-round, well-balanced side, weren't they? And proved that and played under pressure, had to get over the line on a couple of occasions and did it. Ben Stokes again. I think Ben Stokes plays more shots in Test cricket than he does in white ball cricket. He really did play some mature sort of innings. Best all-round side, best balanced side, and could win from sort of like, and prove that they could win from sort of like any situation. A great performance, and as Mike was saying, looking like the best white ball side out there. And I think also just had that extra gear power-wise. You know, you looked at some of those sides and you just thought to yourself, well, if you get the main guns out, you know, you're going to kind of restrict them to a decent total, or they're not going to chase down a total. I think we get with England, you know, you've got the likes of Mo coming in and these guys coming in down the back end. You can still set a score even if you lose three or four early doors.
Yeah, you talk about the power and the flamboyance, but it was that man again, wasn't it? Ben Stokes in the final. With an innings that was just really, really measured and showed his value to the side, being able to sort of take him over the line. And it was his first T20 international 50 as well, which is kind of a remarkable time to do it.
I actually thought his innings against Sri Lanka in the group stages, you know, in Sydney, where it got a little bit tight on a used wicket. I thought that was a special innings, but I don't know what Phil thinks, and I'm not degrading any players from the past at all, but I've never seen an England player play with so much calmness and coolness and clarity under pressure with the bat in hand. You know, you think about the World Cup final in 19, you think about that Headingley innings, now this World Cup final. So he's done it in two World Cup finals. He's won a test match single-handedly from a ridiculous position. I've not seen an England player with the bat in hand look so cool, calculated. I thought against Pakistan, actually, in the final, they were starting to get a flap on. And we must say that I honestly think if Shaheen Shah Afridi had stayed fit, I thought England were just losing the momentum in those middle overs. And then suddenly Harry Brook was out, and then there was loads of pressure on him. And then he comes on, bowls that one ball. It's a dot ball to Moeen Ali. And then they have to bowl Iftikhar, the off spinner. And it was those five deliveries for me that completely changed the momentum of the game. But it's not taking away anything from England. They deserve to be the champions. They're the best team. They've had a little bit of fortune in two finals, actually. The final at Lords, there was a little bit that went their way. This final went their way. But I really do believe that you earn the right to have that little bit of fortune. And England have had it in the finals, but some other teams, when they've won cups in the past, they've had it in semi-finals, quarter-finals. You earn the right to have that little bit of the rub of the green. And, you know, England capitalised. It was that man, Ben Stokes, the best you've seen under pressure, Phil, with the bat in hand?
Well, I think he's getting that way, isn't he? Loves a crucial moment, loves that sort of like pressure of being the man to do the job. And as you say, get people over the line. And he seems to be putting himself in those positions where he can do it, doesn't it? There was a sort of a he didn't quite know his role, I thought, a little bit, coming into this T20. But I think that they've found that sort of role for him in that sort of mature way of about going about things. And I think he did it brilliantly. Yeah, no, I mean, the all-round cricketer.
What would you call the role? He's a closer, right?
Well, yeah, but not a finisher, but a closer, if there's a difference. I'm not sure. But yeah, just that guy that you want in the middle, you know, when the chips are down, and as Mike was saying, that things are starting to get a little bit of a flap on, you want him there. And that's what he's done beautifully.
And Mike, as a batsman, can you define what it is about how he goes about his innings that allows him to do that? Is he just able to get into the zone better than anybody else? Is it cricketing intelligence? So he's his awareness of the situation, what is it?
Oh, I think it's everything. I think it's realizing that, you know, I think when you're chasing a number that's not huge, you know, I don't think the rate was ever, you know, so high that he had to panic so much. You know, England got off to quite a good start. They got, you know, a few early runs, so the kind of rate was never too kind of high for them to worry about. I just think he has that clarity, and I think what he does to the partner at the other end is keep them calm as well. You know, I think that's a real skill, but he also knows he's got the power to hit the boundaries down the back end. You know, you get taught as a kid, be there at the end, you know, just make sure. And I tell you, it takes bravery to do what Ben Stokes does, because the pressure was building. And I do think that Iftikhar, if you look at that Iftikhar, and there was a ball that just fell short of Babar Azam at long off, that could easily have gone to hand. He then just chipped one just for six. You know, so those two shots where he got away with one that just dropped short and one just went over the line, you know, they're the moments. In white ball cricket, you have to be willing to take risk. You know, it's when you take that high risk, and if it comes off for you, you're away. And people like Stokes, once they're away, they're very difficult to stop. But, you know, I will say, I thought the T20, the rain, you know, affected the early parts. But I have to say, you know, the Indian support and the Pakistan support, if you take away the Indian supporters and the Pakistan supporters, the Aussies weren't watching the Aussies. No. Now, they weren't coming out in the numbers to watch the home team. England had a few expats and a bit of Barmy army there. But if you took away Pakistan support and Indian support from that World Cup, I don't think there were many people watching. You know, without those two sets of supporters, they brought life, energy. Actually, when India played Zimbabwe at the MCG in a dead rubber, I think there was 88,000 people there. That was the moment. Yeah. I've known for years and years that India are a powerhouse. That was the moment, actually. I was watching on the telly and thought, India are the powerhouse. You know, they are the powerhouse of world cricket. When you can get 88,000 people in Melbourne to watch you play Zimbabwe, remarkable.
We have Brendan McCullum on the pod. Phil, I think you've probably got some of the best insight because you obviously spent some time with him when you did your Netflix series. This could go anywhere. When was that filmed? And what was he like as a person behind the scenes? Can you give us a sort of a feel for Brendan McCullum, the man? Is he as laid back as he looks?
Absolutely. He is one of the most positive, sort of calm, but then laid back at the same time, guys. I've met a lot of people who are really positive and up and at them and come on. And, you know, if anything, sometimes it can be a little bit too much, you know what I mean? And sort of like the rah-rah about it all, you know. You just sort of go, well, chill out a little bit. We're doing our best, this. But he has that great ability of putting you at the ease. I've met him a couple of times, but only briefly in the media centre and everything. And he was waiting for me to start this series that we were doing. And he was just waiting there. And I've sort of come through a little bit nervous and what have you, and he's just sitting there. He's got a great big smile on his face, you know what I mean, but he's just sort of, there's this sort of air of calmness, and I've sort of gone, hello Brendan mate, how are you, like that, and I've sort of, you know, gone to shake his hand, and he said shall we have a hug, are you a hugger? And I went, well, I don't know, but I'll give you a hug, like that. And we gave each other a little hug sort of thing to sort of, you know, say hi and what have you. And it just went from there. And he's just one of those guys that you just think everything's going to be all right, if you know what I mean. Sometimes, you know, you're sitting there and you're doing a bit of filming or something. You're going, oh, was that all right? Or, you know, did we say the right thing on everything? But he just seemed to say the right thing at exactly the right time. And he was so easy then to just sort of like form a relationship. We became very good friends when we were over there, and just puts everyone at ease, but with a clarity, if you know what I mean. You know what I mean? You just knew what he was after, but he didn't sort of like ram it down your throat, and he wasn't sort of falling asleep. It was, he's a very, very clever chap at disarming you, but then also getting you fired up at the same time, if you know what I'm saying. I think one of his skills for sure. And also, I mean, we were going around and talking about his exploits of what have you. You know, the 1-4, I think it was 174, the first time he batted in the IPL, the fastest 100, the 300 at Wellington. I mean, Crikey O'Reilly, this chap has done a bit, you know what I mean? And but very humble, but then also, you know, with that little steel just behind the eyes. Looks a little bit like a mafiosi boss, doesn't he? Just sitting there on the balcony with the old shades. Something out of The Sopranos.
Oh, he certainly does, yeah.
Yeah.
And we should probably explain for listeners who haven't seen the series, and they should obviously do so on Netflix.
Oh, that's great.
It's slightly weird conceit, in fairness, wasn't it? Yeah. Two of you, two ex-cricketers, going around New Zealand playing golf with each other and... having to do forfeits, basically, if you lost.
Well, there you go. I mean, not many people would have got me to jump out of an aeroplane. Not many people would have got me to do the biggest bungee jump in the Southern Hemisphere. But for some reason, I wanted to do it for Brendan. You know what I mean? I was sitting there going, oh, I don't want to do this. He was going, come on, it's all right. You know what I mean? I sort of went, well, okay, mate. And then, push, off I went. So, a great man manager.
So you were in New Zealand, and I don't think potentially English people might not realise quite what a big deal he is in New Zealand, right? He's uber famous there.
Absolutely. I couldn't have picked a better fella to take me round. I mean, the wineries, the restaurants, everywhere we went, he was just like, as you say, an absolute legend in New Zealand, not only, you know, for his cricket, but I think for a lot of other things as well, and the way he sort of represents what New Zealand's about in a funny sort of way. Do you know what I mean? And that sort of, like, you know, positive, fair play, let's go and win. If we win, that's great. And if the other team are better than us, well, they deserve to win that as well. A lot of fair play in there as well. But then also, you know, a lot of, you know, desire and will to win.
So we only really do big name interviews on this podcast. But today we've got one of the biggest because we're joined by the head coach of the England Test team, Brendan McCullum. Brendan, thank you very much for taking time to talk to us. You're joining us from the England training camp in the UAE before you head off to Pakistan. Today was supposed to be the third day of the warm-up game between England and the England Lions, a sort of probables versus possibles match. There were over 900 runs in the first 2 days, which sounds very McCullum-esque. But today you decided to cancel the match and you went off and played golf instead. Does that give us a bit of insight into your style of coaching?
Look, to be honest, the guys got out of the last 2 days more than we could have ever dreamed of in 3 days. The facilities were amazing. The application and the attitude and the energy that was put in by not just us as well from an England point of view, but also the Lions was fabulous. You know, I think our batters got a lot of time in the middle in a competitive situation against some world-class bowling, and our bowlers got miles on their legs, which is really what you're after. You know, the fielding was fantastic as well. So when it sort of boils down, we felt there was a couple of some areas where we could try and get some real volume into some of our batters this morning, which would be of more benefit than trying to potentially play what would be kind of like a fourth test match. So yeah, we got it done and we're really pleased. And, you know, I think everyone was really happy. The fact we got to play golf this afternoon was a bit of a bonus. But, you know, it's from our point of view, fun's quite an important element of what we're trying to achieve as well. And we got to add a bit of that to it.
Baz, where have you been all my life? Where have you been all my life? Why weren't there coaches around and people running cricket teams like you when I was playing? Days off for golf. Is that a real sort of specific thing that you're trying to bring into the boys just to try to, you know, once you're done and, you know, let's go out and enjoy each other's company and get what we need and then go and have some fun and play like that on the field? Because last summer, mate, was something to behold the way the guys played. You know, what was it, 4 out of 5 chases, full crowds, you know, on the fifth days and everything. It was sensational stuff, mate.
Well, tough as I reckon, you know how I kind of roll first and foremost. And, you know, I think along with the skipper, who is very much of the same kind of ilk, we want the guys to enjoy themselves. You know, there's, yes, the game is so hard, right? Like, we all know how difficult the game is and there's so many demands on us and, you know, we're judged by our results, but ultimately we want to make sure that we leave an impression, not just on the game, but leave an impression on ourselves as well for this period of time in our lives. We want to have a great time and sort of go out there and try and achieve some special moments. So from our point of view, we look at it and we say, what do we need to be at our absolute best to be able to perform in Pakistan? I think the last week or so has been a lot about building camaraderie amongst the group. One lesson we had from earlier on in the year was that because now the team's very separate when you look at how things work amongst the T20 one day and test setup is that, you know, a lot of our guys, they go off and they do their own thing or they play for their counties or they're off, you know, playing for various teams throughout the calendar year. So if we're trying to bring a camaraderie to ask these guys to do certain things which might test their push the boundaries, so to speak, then we need to get them together earlier. We need to bring them together a little bit earlier. And a lot of that is not to do with cricket, but it's about breaking down some of those barriers and spending time socially, and whether that's golf or at the pool or there's many different things that you can do to try and force the boys together to spend time together and break down some of those barriers. And once that's done, you spend a couple of days together, and then you start putting the graft in and ticking off some of the skill aspect of it. But that's the idea. I don't know if it's going to work, Tuffers, to be honest, but that's kind of the idea. I just look at it from like when I used to play, what would I like as a player? And that's what the skip keeps saying was, I think the boys are like this. So hence why we try a few of these things, and we'll see where we land.
Yeah. I'm just quickly talking about Pakistan, you brought in the new young leggy, Ahmed. Thoughts on him? He looks a talent.
Yeah, it was a really interesting one that toughest because, you know, you look at him in isolation and that selection, it looks a little bit rogue. But when you sort of think about the fact that we've been, well, not so much me because I've only been in the job, you know, a couple of minutes, but everyone else has been scouting him for a long period of time and saying he's a talent which is worth sort of looking at. We felt that he's someone that might benefit from the environment that we've got at the moment. We've got a lot of senior players, a lot of guys who will look after him in the setup as well. And we know that he's not the finished product, you know, he's a long way away from that. But he's got something which is pretty kind of special. And now it's up to us, to be honest. It's up to the senior players, it's up to the skipper, it's up to myself, it's up to all the coaches to now try and accelerate the process to get the best out of Rehan. He is a talent which is pretty exciting, but we'll have to persevere through the next little while to find out if we can get the best out of him. But you know, I think it's great. I mean, when was the last time that English cricket or, you know, they invested in an 18-year-old kid and said, you know what, we think you've got something, let's come along for the ride and we'll see if we can find it.
What is he like as a character? I see him as a player. I see his leg spin. He can whack a ball as well. He looks a real character on the field. What's he like off the field?
Well, I don't really know, to be honest, Vaughn. Caught up with him this morning. He was downstairs and he was doing a skin fold test or something, which I didn't really know too much about, but he was down there doing those. And I said, bugger that. Let's go and have a bit of breakfast instead. And anyway, we're sitting there at breakfast and I said, what are you into outside of cricket? He said, cricket. I said, what are your passions? Like, what are the things which really drive you? And he said, cricket. And I said, what about school, you know? What did you do at school? And he said, well, I left school early because they just wanted to tell me what to do and all I wanted to do was play cricket. what a fabulous kind of opportunity for someone like him. You know, he's young and he's got his family is obviously – really invested in the game, and you know he seems really confident in himself. I want to get to know him, and I want to try and help him. I've got an 18-year-old kid myself, you know, like, and here he is. He's going to be 18 years of age, and he's going to be on a tour for England to Pakistan. So there's some real opportunities in there, and there'll be some challenges along the way, but it's our job to get the best out of him. So hopefully we can do that over the next little while.
And Baz, I'll give you a heads up. You know he's got a brother who's a little bit younger.
Well, he told me he's better.
Well, the reason why he ended up bowling leg spin, I think, because his brother bowls outstanding off spin. So I reckon in the next five, if you're going to stay the England coach for the next 5 years, it wouldn't surprise me if you had two brothers playing for the England side together as spin twins.
Well, he told me his older brother's better as well.
Well, I haven't seen that one. I've only seen the younger one.
Yeah, he said left arm seamer. He says a jet. maybe he's taken up a scouting role.
When you took the England job, you know what I mean? What was going sort of through your mind? Because there was a little bit of sort of like, so it's a bit left field, wasn't it? You know what I mean? Has it measured up to your expectations or? You know, what's it? How's it sort of like come over you? How are you finding it? You know what I mean? It's all been great, the results on the field, but have you been loving every minute of it as well?
Yeah, well, I had a pretty good life beforehand, Tuffers. You know, I was doing a couple of radio things. I've done a little bit of commentary, a little bit of IPL coaching. I was having the odd rogue TV show with a couple of, you know, with a bit of a legend from over there in the UK. And I had a great gig. like proper gig, and I certainly wasn't chasing anything. I didn't really want the job as such because I thought it was something which would be quite a big gig. But now I'm in the job, honestly, I'm absolutely loving it. The opportunity to work with Stokesy is something that is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Like, he is an incredible human being. He is a rare talent that has come across our game, and his vision for where this team wants to go is so aligned to how I like to see the game played. And I think we both see our role as trying to ensure that people want to go and watch us play, which is kind of cool. Results aside, I know we're judged by them, but from our point of view, we just want to put bums on seats and entertain people and try and see the best players that are rocking around England, full of talent, realise some of that talent and entertain the world.
On that, Baz, when you were interviewing for the job, to what extent did you sense that the conditions in English cricket were such that it would be receptive to your particular cricket philosophy?
Well, I didn't really worry about it, to be honest. if you want me to do the job, then this is kind of how I live my life and this is kind of what I'm into. And if that works for you and that's what you're after, then sweet as. If it's not, then that's cool too. You know, I'll go back to rocking around the other circuit that I was doing. But, you know, yeah, it was a good process to go through and I enjoyed it. And if they had have chosen, if, you know, Rob Key and the other group of people had have chosen someone else, then that's cool too. But, you know, I've always been very authentic with how I like to sort of go about things. And, you know, if it works for you, then cool. If it doesn't, then that's sweet as too.
How do you define your style of coaching? You've talked about letting the players be themselves, but it can't be quite as simple as that, can it? Or is it? And if it is, why haven't other coaches found it so difficult?
Well, I don't really know what my style is, really. I'm not really sure I'm a coach either. I don't really know. I look at it as what it used to be like being a player, and what would you like from the people who are running the kind of structure at the time, and you look at some things, and a lot of the time I think players are right, and sometimes you kind of go, you know what, we need a little bit of a, not firmer hand, but we need someone to just tell us what we need to do in this situation. It might be more of a pressure situation. It's kind of like, right, this is what we signed off on, lads, let's go and have a crack. You know, this is what you've all agreed, so let's do it, and sort of remain on task. But I don't really know. I'm sort of feeling it out myself, to be honest. I just try and turn up every day and be consistent with the guys, and I just want to see them be as good a players as what their talent suggests. One thing I have noticed since I've been in the England job, I thought England players were good. I didn't realise that they were as good as what they are. And that's not just talking about the current crop, but it's also talking about the crop which falls underneath as well, which I've been lucky enough to see over here in Abu Dhabi, and also when we played down in, when the Lions played down in Canterbury. There is some serious skill which is operating around English cricket, and I'm not sure we realise how good it is. I've been lucky enough to sit on the outside, so you know, I've seen it, and now I've guessed it, and now that I've seen it, it is. You know, skill is not a problem in English cricket. It's about how we unlock that skill. So the language that we talk and the environment that we create allows those players to become the best possible players they can be in the shortest period of time, and that's what our job is.
Baz, do you think that we're on the sort of a cusp of sort of a big change in Test cricket? Do you think, you know, the way people are going to look at it, view at it, because it was sort of, it was under pressure, wasn't it, Test cricket? It's a bit boring and what have you. Do you think all the other sides now are going to buy into this sort of way of playing it? I'm loath to say Bazball. I know you don't like it, mate, but do you think that sort of Test cricket is going to become a different animal now?
I hope so, Tuffers. You know, like, I mean, you guys have played the game a lot. You've spent a lot of your life sort of committed to the beauty of Test cricket and committing to everything that comes with it. I was lucky enough to play over 100 Tests for New Zealand, and whilst I had a great life playing T20 cricket and short version cricket around the world, for me, Test cricket was always the pinnacle. And I remember doing a speech at Lord's a few years ago, and it was about where's the direction of Test cricket going. And I remember saying, like, exactly that I love it, and it's, to me, it's the pinnacle of the game, but enjoy it while it lasts because it's a dying sport. And that, I guess, for me, was one of the real important aspects of taking this job on, is there's only one team in the world, in my opinion, that can ensure that Test cricket not just survives but also thrives, and that's England, because of the not just the resource but the fan base, the history that follows the game. You know, you look at this year, and every Test match pretty much was sold out, and there's so much following for the game. And so our opportunity and what's in front of us is we have an opportunity now to be able to say Test cricket can survive and it can thrive for who knows how long. And it can entertain people, and it can encourage the next group of people, the next group of cricketers out there, to stay committed to playing a form of long version cricket as well. And that's kind of what our brief is, and it's kind of why you take on a role that you've taken on. And you know, I feel very privileged to be in that position. It comes with a lot of pressure, no doubt. And that's exactly what the skipper and I both think, is we have a chance here to get people to not fall in love with Test cricket, because there's already a lot of people in love with it, but the next generation to understand Test cricket and fall in love with it and to want to come and watch us. And that's kind of what we're trying to achieve.
I have to say, I love this approach that you've brought. It's refreshing. It gets you excited about arriving at the game. I mean, for such a long time in Test cricket in the UK, we were a little bit timid and not too sure how we're going to play. We now arrive knowing exactly the style of cricket that England are going to play. And I do think you will get other teams trying to follow suit. I'm going to put you in charge of world cricket, not just English cricket. And I'm going to give you the chance to try and give a vision of where Test cricket can improve globally. And what are you going to do that?
It doesn't sound like a job I'm that interested in, to be honest, Vaughan.
No, I'm going to pay you a lot of money. I'm going to give you a load of horses. I'm going to allow you to buy as many horses as you want. You can have them racing all the way around the world at the end of it. But you're in charge of world, particularly Test cricket. What are you going to do with it?
Oh, dear. Good luck with that one.
Look, I think...
Finish earlier.
I actually really think cricket's in a really fascinating space at the moment. I think the way that the game's going, I think we're going to see a real emergence of sort of domestic T20 cricket. I think we'll see players who will end up being contracted by franchises around the world, because not just because of the money which is on offer, but there's so much less red tape associated with privatised franchises that you can just take care of things, and people can, you know, you make things happen quickly. Very similar to football, I guess, you know, you can be secure in what you're doing. You can have long-term deals, and then perhaps being released to play international cricket when the time's right, whether that's World Cups, whether that's Test cricket. I don't know. I think Kesey said the other day that we have to move with the times as well, and make sure that we are understanding of what players' opportunities are out there. And I couldn't agree more, because the opportunities are so great, and ultimately, you know, people have got, they need to look after their families, and they need to ensure that their careers are successful long term as well. So I get all that stuff, but I just want them to ideally be desperate to play Test cricket. It is a game, and you guys know it better than me, you know, but it is the best form of cricket. The journey it takes you on, the novel that Test cricket is so great that if we ever lost that, then to me the game becomes just another game. And so I think embrace T20 cricket, embrace franchise cricket, but try and do what you can to ensure that the purest form of the game survives.
A quick question about Bazball. Phil said you don't like the term. Why don't you like the term? Do you not like it because it's you think it's too simplistic, or because it puts the focus on you rather than the players, or both?
Well, it's just like it's like the media came out with it. like it just doesn't make any sense. Like Stokesy, like, is there anyone who has encapsulated a style of play more so than our skipper? You know what I mean? Like, he's run down the wicket first ball in Test cricket. So to me, it's not. It's also a little bit misunderstood, I think. Well, it's not misunderstood. I don't want to be. We're going to be really careful that, you know, what we've been able to achieve over the summer, we've got to be really careful that we're not trying to preach it as well, because everyone develops in their own way and their own time, and their skills develop at different stages, and people get it at different points. But all we're trying to do is just make Test cricket entertaining. We want to free guys up so that their talent comes through. And look, both the skipper and myself, we hate losing. Like, hate losing, but you can accept losing because you're trying to entertain, you're trying, like, you're risking winning. You're risking losing to try and achieve something that you walk away as a fan and you say, you know what? I've had a great day. I've had an absolute great day. We got beat, but gee, I've had a great day. And that ultimately, like, that's what you're trying to achieve, right? It's like watching a movie. You sit there and you got all the big actors. If it doesn't grab you, then sort of it's kind of pointless. But from our point of view, at least we're going to fire some shots and we're going to try and achieve it. And if we don't, well, that's okay too.
Just on that style of cricket, which is great, you go to Pakistan and traditionally, historically, attritional cricket has worked in Pakistan as well. Are you the kind of team that's just going to go and play this kind of expansive way all the time, or are you going to try and adapt to the conditions potentially that you might find in Pakistan?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question as well, Vaughan, because we don't really know the conditions, but if you look at the sort of last few series which have been over there, it has been that sort of attritional type of cricket. We've got a little bit of mail that the conditions might be slightly different, but we'll wait and see. And hence our whole preparation has been just get yourself ready and we'll work it out once we get over there. But I think, like, again, like, if we go back to the mantra throughout the summer and we look at some examples of the summer, and everyone points to, you know, Johnny Bairstow smoking it everywhere and Stokesy run down the wicket and, you know, sort of Ollie Pope dancing down the track and Joe Root sort of playing reverse sweeps and all that. But one of the real things we're trying to encourage is just if you're totally present in the moment and you're prepared to identify when the moment is that you have to absorb pressure and the moment is that you have to reapply pressure back on the opposition, then you give yourself the best chance. So let's see what happens in Pakistan. From my point of view, I think the Test series will be really close. I think there'll be some really key moments, which if we are present in those moments and we're open-minded about what we're trying to achieve, but we have a positive mindset going into it and we're prepared to take the positive option when that moment arises, then that'll give us our best option as well. I look back on the summer, we won 6 out of 7 Test matches. We could have lost all 7 because every Test had a really key moment or two, but we were brave enough and we were courageous enough in those moments and we're smart enough as well to identify it and be positive.
And that'll be the real test, won't it? Because as you say, you've had a really great summer. There will come a time where you string a few losses together, and it will be sort of maintaining this attitude and the feel-good attitude in the changing room through the losses as well will be the real next test, I assume.
That's so English, eh? There'll be a string of losses, like.
Well, just on the law of averages, right? You're never going to lose again?
Well, who knows? We'll deal with that when their time comes, but it's such an English comment. Let's see what happens. You know, we'll have a crack. And if we lose, then we'll deal with it in that point in time. But from our point of view, we lost that Test match against South Africa, right? And I remember walking into the media stuff at the time, and it was like, baseball was always going to fail. It's like, for a start, why are you even calling it that? And then it was like, this guy can't do this and this guy can't do that. And I'm like, we got beat. We lost a toss on an absolute snake pit and we got beat. And I'm like, unlucky. We're not entertained. It was a good game. They played well. South Africa were too good for us, you know, like respect to them. And that's kind of what the competition is, right? And if that stuff happens, and then so be it, we'll deal with it at the time. The thing I know is that these guys are a tight knit unit, and I'm not just talking about the current group of players that we've had, but also the next sort of group as well, which we've been lucky enough to spend some time with over here. And if we can force them together and push them, like their talent is so good that we'll get the best out of them and we'll be able to bounce back when the time matters. And I think that's, to me, that's a really important thing. It's just you have a resilient environment that is not, it can't move with the wind, if that makes sense. You just got to, we believe in what we're doing. There'll be times where we get beat, where we play well. And that's okay. We just get up and we go again and we have another crack at it.
Baz, as much as we used to try and score a few runs, we all know to win Test matches, you need to get 20 wickets. How excited was it for you as a coach to see Jofra Archer back bowling this week?
Yeah, it was pretty exciting, to be honest, Fawny. I watched him bowl this morning and I was just, he is an incredible talent, right? Like, not only has he had to go through some hardship over the last little while, but, you know, he's been there, he's done it. He could have easily just said, you know what, I'll go and do what's easy, which is go and do franchise cricket around the world. But he's desperate to represent England and win Ashes series and win Test matches for England and make everyone proud. So it was really exciting, to be honest. And, you know, it was great to have him around the group, and he's really buzzing. And the guys love having him around too. You know, he's got something really, really special. And his skill and his experience and his personality rubs off on those other guys as well. It was pretty awesome, to be honest.
Baz, does that mean that you've now got to sort of start looking at workloads? And I've been, you know, reading in the papers and what have you about he wants to play all forms of cricket for England and everything. Is that a hardship? Or do you just say, you know, listen, just play until something happens? Or do you have to then look into it a little bit deeper than that? And is that a problem for you? Because we love hearing you talk about just go out there and express yourself and everything, but these guys do need to be looked after, don't they?
Yeah, and Joff especially, because of what he's gone through over the last little while, you know. I don't really understand all that science and medicine sort of carry on, but you follow the experts, and there's some good people involved in English cricket who are, you know, they're making those kind of decisions and make sure that they're going to look after him. And Joff's very much across that stuff as well. There's a good plan set in place for him, which allows him to play some other cricket around the world leading into the Ashes as well. And all going well, hopefully he'll be available and he'll be ready to go. But, you know, the temptation is to try and rush in.
Yeah.
But you got to look at, to me, you look at Joff and you say, right, where do you want him to be in 30 years' time? You know, like, what do you want him to do? You don't want to try and rush it now and just selfishly get him to a stage where, you know, you want him to perform. You've got to look after the person as well. And he's got things that he needs to achieve in the next little while. And hopefully that'll give him the longest period of his career to be successful and set himself up for the rest of his life.
Baz, just we're about, what, 8-9 months away from an Ashes series. You know, it's going to be your first as an England coach. When you look over to Australia and you see, you know, Justin Langer upsetting a few with a few comments about the players. Do you read those kind of comments down to, oh, that's quite handy for us? Whereas you're probably in the past, always quite amusing. It's quite handy to see that Australia going through a little bit of a, it looks to me like a lot of the old players are in the Langer camp, and obviously the new breed of the new players are obviously with Andrew McDonald. There's something happening over there that you must be quite liking somewhat.
obviously, I do read some of that stuff, and you watch what's unfolding and all that. But unless you're on the inside, you don't really know, right? So I expect that when we come Ashes time, which is in a period of time, we've got a few other series to focus on for now. It'll be a very tight series, so maybe we'll hold on to some of that stuff until then, I reckon.
Wise words.
Nice straight back for the first time in your career there, Baz. I was hoping you were going to come dancing down like you did in Wellington.
I don't know if you've heard the podcast before, Brendan, but we have a segment where Phil does a series of either or questions. I think he's been preparing long and hard, especially for you, these. So come on, Phil.
Okay, then. Some of them are a little bit ticklish, but I want good, honest answers, which I know I'm always going to get from you, Baz. What would be your perfect day? A day on the golf course or a day at the racetrack?
Why can't you do both?
Because it's either or. The game, it's either or.
Right. I'd say golf course because I'd end up punting at home that night.
Okay, lovely. Next one. Average or strike rate?
Strike rate. That's a dumb question. Tough as... Come on, Cat. You've been in that.
Right, next one. Here we go. Scoring the fastest ever test century or keeping Dan Carter out of your high school rugby team? I mean, wow, that is something. But they both are.
Fastest test century because I had 50 of my mates there that day and it was a hell of a night the night before too.
I remember you talking about that, Baz, that fastest 100 when we did our TV show. And you said you went out there and it was zipping around so much that you thought, if I try and get stuck in here, I'm just going to nick off. So you just decided to tee off, didn't you?
Well, I watched Kane Williamson, who in my mind had the greatest defensive technique in world cricket, get 7 off 70 balls. And I was like, there is no chance I can score a run out there if I'm trying to defend. So I'm just going to swing for the hills. So I batted outside leg stump. And I was like, I'm just going to cut anything on off stump, and if it's pitched up, I'm going to swing as hard as I can. And I got lucky. I left it in the hand of the cricketing gods.
Talking about Kane Williamson, I'm going to put you in a tricky position here now, mate. Kane Williamson or Joe Root, and you can't have both. There you go. Sorry, mate, but you've got to take
that. Is a tough question, eh? I didn't realise it was so hard hitting this podcast. I'm going to say Joe Root, and there's one definitive factor, okay, in that's that he played a reverse lap in a test match, which went for 6. So it's like he gets my vote.
Good answer. The last one, okay, being thrown out of an aeroplane over Lake Taupo. Or doing the highest bungee jump in the Southern Hemisphere in Queenstown, which I both did and you bloody didn't.
I'm so sorry. Like, I feel so bad about that, you know? Like, we had a great time together, but it was just, you know, I mean, Dawn said to me that I had to make sure that you enjoyed all of the setup which we had to offer, but I think I would go for an aeroplane because you said to me that was a great experience.
It was.
Whereas the bungee jump, like, you look terrified. I actually thought you may have shat yourself.
I think a bit did come out, actually, but it was great fun. I love
it. No reason to apologise. If Phil had been better at golf, he wouldn't have had to do either.
Correct.
Well, he actually beat me at golf as well. We just manufactured it, didn't we? We had to make sure that he had to do all those fun activities.
Blimey, that was pretty impressive, wasn't it, Mike? I mean, that's not your usual persona for a coach. Have you ever come anybody in your playing career? Do you ever come across anybody who talked like that, sounded like that?
No, he's very impressive, and there's you know, been some great people of the game of cricket over the generations, but I think Baz McCullum's up there with the best. You know, I think he kind of just comes across as just being a good guy, very positive guy. You know, I think it was a year or so ago when he got the role, and I was a bit circumspect about him because I thought, oh, wait a minute, him and Ben together could be a little bit chaotic. Wasn't quite sure about Baz and Test cricket coaching. Did he really want to do it? He alluded to himself of why, you know, he didn't need to do this role. But the combination that those two have created very, very quickly inside seven matches is remarkable. You know, and the kind of joy of wanting to for us all to watch Test cricket and watch them in the summer was great. But going to Pakistan, you get a sense that they're going to have a good go again. You get a sense that they're not going to suddenly go, oh, we'll try and play attritionally and try and wear the Pakistani players down. I think they'll try and play aggressively. I actually love the fact that he called off day three of the warm-up game. Because I like people. And because history is irrelevant. History, what's gone in the past is irrelevant when you're in the here and now. You know, I think what he's trying to do is say to this group of England players, and you've got to remember, a lot of these players have played in the England teams of the past where, you know, particularly the last Test team, you know, which went through COVID times, it wasn't easy, but they were quite a hard watch because we were never sure how they wanted to play and we were never sure how they wanted to be. Now, the most impressed that I've been in terms of the way that they've played has been obviously flamboyant, great, but it's the fact that he seems to have got Jimmy Anderson almost smiling, playing Test cricket. And Stuart Broad excited about, these are the guys at the end of their careers and have been through, you know, two generations of playing Test match cricket. And they've played a style of cricket that's been very attritional and wearing the opposition down. And for Baz McCullum and Ben Stokes to almost say, look, we're just going to have a right good go. And we're going to have we're going to have a good laugh doing it. Now, it looks like a set of players and a group of individuals and a group of management. You know what, Phil? I'd love to be in this setup. You know, as ex-players, I only ever get jealous when I look into an environment and think, I would want, I'll be honest with you, I haven't looked into the England environment in Test cricket for a long time and thought I want to be a part of it. I've always watched it and looked at it and gone, God, it looks a bit dull. Well, this environment, I go, I want to be a part of this little group.
On to some of the specifics for this Pakistan tour. We are going to have to talk about openers again because that's still a big question mark. Do you think Duckett's done enough to earn a shot?
Duckett, I think yes. I think yes. Looks to play the sweep shots, looks to play spin. I can remember that he didn't have a great tour in India, did he? I think he just kept sort of, Ashwin just kept knocking him over. But I think he's adapted his game. He's that kind of guy. As a spin bowler on flat decks, you want guys, you know, as a spin bowler hitting you into your field. I think that the likes of Duckett, he can play reverse laps. He can sweep in front of the square. He can paddle it around the corner. He looks to play a lot of sort of crossbat shots. So long as he gets himself in on those Pakistan tracks, I think he's a tricky bowler, a tricky batsman, to bowl that for a spinner. So I think he will get a go, yes.
And Mike, what do you think, Livingston as second spinner?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to react to the conditions, but yeah, I think Livingston will play. I actually think he's going to play quite a lot of Test cricket in the future.
Yeah.
You know, with Baz McCullum, Ben Stokes, I just think Liam's almost like the perfect style cricketer for them. You know, Will Jacks is exactly the same there. They're cricketers that if you got them batting at 7 or 8 in Test cricket, you look at Liam Livingstone's first-class record, it's better than most players that have been picked over the last few years. He's technically quite good. And obviously, he's an aggressor. He can bowl off-spin, leg spin. I don't think his spin will, you know, rip up any trees. I don't think he'll be getting 6 and 7 fers, but I think he'll contribute. If England get runs on the board and he gets to days 4 and 5, then there's a bit of rough for him to bowl into. You know, I think he can get, you know, some nice handy wickets. He's a good fielder. And he just looks the kind of cricketer that he's almost stumbled across the Test team at exactly the right time because he's got two perfect style characters running the side. Will Jacks will be excited as well. Whether he'll play in the Test series, we'll have to wait and see. They pick Rian Ahmed, 18 years old, from Leicester.
Do you think he'll play in this tour, do you think?
I think he will, yeah. I think there's a very good chance that he might do, yeah.
I think there is a chance, especially in the second and the third test. Just going back to Livingston a little bit, there again, as a spin bowler on flat decks that aren't doing too much, I don't want to see Liam Livingstone coming stomping to the crease.
That was exactly what I was thinking. I mean, if you're the opposition, you've got six wickets down and out of the pavilion appears Livingstone. It's a nightmare.
Absolutely.
It?
But the likes of Livingstone and the likes of Duckett, they've just got to get their tempo right in Pakistan. You've got to get yourself in. As you say, you've got to have that technique. Yeah. Mike, you always say this, that you've got 20 balls. You've got to get past that first 20 balls. You can't go running down the pitch because Test match cricket is different. You've got to get yourself in, get yourself to 10 or 15, and then look to start putting on the gas. You know what I mean? So I think that they'll be talking about that, about how to craft their innings is, but crikey, O'Reilly. It's a bit like a Gilchrist coming in. It's a bit like a Gilchrist coming stomping down the steps of the Oval.
But I do reckon, Phil, of all the teams you play against, I reckon the hardest team to get in against is Pakistan.
Absolutely, especially early on.
Your first 20-odd balls against Pakistan, they can be a nightmare because they just up the tempo. As soon as they get one wicket, the crowd get excited, they get excited, and suddenly you'll be facing balls that coming down from the seamers at 6-7 miles an hour quicker than their average. They just kind of, they put the tempo up somewhat. So that's an absolute... The worry for England on this tour is 20 wickets. In the summer, they did great. They got 20 wickets. The pitches were pretty flat and England just worked away in a system. But in Pakistan, the wickets can be flat and generally you need pace. England haven't got any. You know, Wood's not playing the first game. Jofra's injured. Ollie Stone's not around. So I don't see the pace element in the England side. And they don't have a world-class mystery or a world-class spinner. They are very good orthodox spinners. But in Pakistan, if you look at the way that they've been beaten at home, Australia beat them with pace.
Yeah.
The likes of Mitchell Starc, Cummins bowling quickly. You know, England don't have. They have Anderson. They have Ollie Robinson. Hopefully Wood will play a part during the back end of the series, but I'll be very interested to see what tactics Ben Stokes and Baz can create to put doubt in the Pakistani batters' minds on flat wickets. And there might be movement on days one and two because I believe there's a bit of grass, but there will be times where it's flat.
Yeah.
And how are England going to get the wickets?
Yeah. One thing we should mention is Ben Stokes, who has said he's going to donate his match fees to the Pakistan Flood Appeal. He tweeted out, "The game has given me a lot in my life. I feel it's only right to give something back that goes far beyond cricket," which is obviously an amazing gesture. We'll leave a link to donate to that cause in the show notes if you want to make a donation yourself. One other news story we should mention before we go, and that was that there's been an approach to English cricket from a private equity firm called Bridgepoint Group, who, according to the reports, are offering $400 million for a 75% stake in the 100, which is a massive deal and could really change the landscape of English cricket, Mike.
I think there is a possibility that may happen in the future. I just wonder whether the ECB need that kind of number to be sent around at the minute, because the pressure that they're getting put under by counties about the kind of structure of the game, and the ECB obviously need the 100 to work. The story was broken by Sky, who need the 100 to work. So I'm a little bit sceptical of the timing at a time where all the county chairmen are probably having a pop at the ECB for how much the 100 spent. And then suddenly there's a story that breaks that someone's willing to pay 400 or 300 million for 75%. I do think it will get sold in time, but I don't think this is the right time to be selling anything if you don't have to. But yeah. I think it may have been a story that was to maybe shut up a few county chairmen or people around the county game who have not quite been forthcoming in supporting the 100, would I say.
I have to say, I love your cynicism, Mike. You'd make a good journalist.
Having said that, though, it's a good number. It's a good number, whether it's right, wrong, or not. It's a lot of money.
Phil, let me tell you, it's worth $300 million for 75% now on the back of two seasons, and particularly this season where it wasn't quite as powerful. We all felt as the first season. Just wait a couple of years if it really does start to fly a bit.
Yeah,
maybe Bridgepoint feel that they may have a bargain at that price. So I wouldn't be selling anything at the minute.
Yeah, well, it's also like all assets at the moment are a little bit depressed. So you want to wait until we shake off the recession. Right, that's it for today on the Vaughney and Tuffers Cricket Club. A huge thanks to England head coach Brendan McCullum for his time, and to Mike and Phil too. A reminder that if you have any feedback for us, it's much appreciated. The address is cricketclub@telegraph.co.uk, and we're very keen to hear from you. If you're new to the Vaughney and Tuffers Cricket Club, our channel is full of past episodes with star-studded names, the likes of Joe Root, Trent Bolt and Wasim Akram, to name just a few. You can head over there and catch up on those episodes. Until next week, goodbye.